I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Doreen Ravenscroft, arts patron behind the Doris Miller Memorial and the Waco Cultural Arts Fest. We discuss how growing up in post-war Britain taught her the power of art, and we learn about how she's building the artistic culture in East Waco. But first, it's the Small Business Spotlight, presented by American Bank. Crowds have evolved from weekends-only status to permanent fixture, and long gone are the days when you were the only one dining at Portofino's on a Tuesday night. Now the folks on your left might be tourists from Washington, D.C., and the ones on the right made the short commute from Woodway. As downtown streets fill with more and more activity, the need grows for a respite, something tucked away from the noise and, ideally, from reality. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, shining the small business spotlight on Thirst, Third Space Theory Coffee.
The theory on the third space is that everyone has their home where they relax and, you know, do home stuff, and they have their work. But I believe every human needs a space where they can go and connect and share.
For 5 years, Andreas Zalumis worked at Starbucks, a place where coffees are assembled, not made. And there's a 60% chance the name on your cup is misspelled.
Ethiopian pour over for Sarah.
He'd often dream up business ideas with his wife and knew he wanted to create a concept that would draw the customer in. Something handcrafted and human.
But we had been playing around with coffee menus when we lived in Houston, restaurants, and, you know, we were thinking about something quick bites, you know, something that was quick and easy, but at the same time also created like that sense of like made in front of you, you know, that atmosphere.
Thirst Coffee, located inside Cultivate 712, is surrounded by work from some of the finest artists in Central Texas. Andreas says the gallery setting fosters conversations with customers different from those than he'd have at Starbucks.
That's what we want to bring to the table. We just don't want to be another coffee shop. We want to be a coffee shop. You can come in and share an experience, you know, and being in Cultivate where there's art pieces everywhere. There's always a talking point. It's something for you to look at, you know. And we just want to be part of that, you know, community of artists in Waco.
Andreas has partnered with Chaney Brothers Coffee, located in Crawford, to provide his beans. Roaster Philip Chaney produces 16 different flavors, each with a distinct profile.
He has a full setup in his coffee shop of like calibrated, you know, water pressure to all this other. So it's when you find people like that, and if you're going for more than just, you know, quantity, you're going for quality, you kind of just gravitate more to it.
The Thirst operation is Insta-worthy, and the coffee's strong, but the goal of the space is to provide another avenue for connecting Wacoans.
We can be a part of a community, so being part of Waco and helping it, you know, prosper, which is, you know, cool to say that you can do.
I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and this has been the Small Business Spotlight, presented by American Bank, with three convenient locations in Waco, including an expanded branch downtown at Franklin and 4th. In the summer of 2008, four college kids, two from Baylor and two from A&M, road tripped across the states on a quest to take America's spiritual temperature. They realized that their own Christian walks were dictated more by routine than relationship, and they wanted to see how Americans across the country felt about topics like purpose, creation, and the afterlife. The fruit of their labor, a documentary called One Nation Under God, went on to win multiple awards and charm thousands at events on college campuses. On October 15th, Baylor Student Life will be hosting a 10th anniversary screening as part of the department's Movie Monday program, which shows free, independent, and documentary films every Monday night at the Hippodrome Theater. Jordy Dickey is the assistant director of the Bill Daniel Student Center and is here on Downtown Depot. Tell me a little bit about some of the programming that are available for Baylor students and Wacoans through the sub.
Absolutely. So one of the things we love about the Bill Daniel Student Center is not only is it a campus living room for our students, but it opens up the doors to a common ground for individuals, including Wacoans, to come.
I see what you did there with common ground.
Yeah. enjoy the space. And so we are excited to offer a variety of programs. that can engage the Baylor community as well as the Waco community. And so one of those is we've brought Common Grounds into the space this year, and it's been wonderful as they serve up amazing amounts of fresh brewed coffee, as well as they bring in pastries from another local partner, Milo.
And it's popping every time I've been in the sub.
Yes, it has really changed the landscape of the student center. We love seeing people actively engaging, hanging out on the couches, making it their number one meeting spot or study spot on campus. And so that's been a really successful partnership. And so that's just one partnership that we've kind of started to really help students understand that they are a part of this larger community outside the walls of Baylor. Yeah.
And there's a growing initiative to connect Baylor with the city of Waco. And one way you guys have done that is by partnering with the Hippodrome.
Absolutely. So we realized within the student union, we didn't have a space that could meet some of our programming needs. And so what a better way to advance into the city and kind of expand the walls of the student union and partner with the Waco Hippodrome, where we host Movie Mondays every Monday.
And what typically is the fare at these Movie Mondays? Is it for students? Is it for the community? What's shown and how do you choose what is shown?
Absolutely. So the idea behind the program is to introduce everybody to a variety of independent and documentary films that dive into the important topics within our world. And so we show everything from Won't You Be My Neighbor, with the story of Fred Rogers and the impact that he made within the world, to we just showed recently a film in partnership with BU History, Defying the Nazis. It's a Ken Burns documentary, and that was important to kind of find out what was going on during World War II and individuals that were standing up and being a voice for individuals. And so it's a wide variety of films. One of the other films that we are considering is even a rock climbing film and the importance of getting out in the great outdoors and enjoying that and seeing life through that lens. And so we have a committee that's comprised of Wade Cohens and people within the Baylor community that are helping us to select films for each season.
Baylor University bringing independent film to downtown Waco through their Movie Monday program. Jordy Dickey is the assistant director of the Bill Daniel Student Center on campus. Jordy, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot and telling us what you do.
Absolutely. Thank you.
After the screening, you'll get a Q&A with the director, Baylor grad Will Backe, hosted by me, because I was one of those Aggies who made the movie with him. It'll be fun. It's free. We'll see you at 7 p.m. on October 15th. I'm now joined in studio by Doreen Ravenscroft. Doreen is the president of the Waco Cultural Arts Fest, and amidst this busy week was sweet enough to stop by the studio and chit-chat. Doreen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Tell me a little bit about your Waco history, Doreen.
Well, my Waco history began in 1978. You know, my husband, Bill, was the research director for M&M Mars, and we relocated from England in 1976.
Okay, wait, hold on. Research director for M&M Mars. You guys are just eating Snickers bars all day? That's what I'm imagining his job is.
No. He's a chemist. He was a chemistry and PhD. And so, you know, you start off in the food industry and you start off with bucket chemistry and then you build it up to, you know, production size chemistry, because everything in the production of food is chemistry. It has to have a chemistry formula. So, you know, when folks double up a recipe and it doesn't work,
doesn't always work,
it's already a mistake in it. So, you know, don't get mad with yourself if you double up a recipe and it makes a mess. You just have to do it individually each time.
So you guys moved from England here for the Mars job?
We did, yes. Bill first moved to Hackettstown, New Jersey. He was an expert in oils and fats when he was with Unilever. And then the Mars plant Waco was going to produce the Twix bar, which is actually he formulated in England. And the cookie, which we call a biscuit, had to be reformulated. Reformulated because the flour in the US has more gluten than the flour in the UK. And so he came over to Waco to finalize the reformulation.
And what were you doing in Waco?
Well, I was just his wife until I, you know, with two kids and tearing around with horses. And then eventually I was able to have the correct status in the United States because we were only staying for 3 years. Mars was shipping us back to England.
Okay.
So we all got the correct status. And I started a company called Flowers by Design.
What were your memories of Waco when you first moved here? What was the city like? Kind of set the scene for me.
Oh.
Would you have even really considered it a city at that time coming from?
No.
Okay.
No, we would not. If you can imagine Valley Mills with green fields, where Target was the Lake Air Mall. Montgomery Wards was an anchor and Goldstein Miguel was at the other end. And then all where Fuddruckers is was a great big green field. And you know, the Walt Fair Real Estate Company wasn't there. And where, the bank, Extraco Bank, was the Safeway supermarket.
Wow.
So quite a lot of changes. You know, Waco has melded together like a city. Some of the spaces are being filled in.
And from that time when you had just moved to Waco and your husband's working at Mars, you're raising two children here, the city has evolved a lot, you know,
absolutely,
since then.
Absolutely.
But at some point you got very involved with arts and culture and pushing those initiatives in Waco.
I did. I actually sought out to join some organizations as soon as we came. So I became a member of the Art Center, the Waco Symphony, and the Historic Waco Foundation. And
were those things you were involved in while living in England?
Especially the visual arts.
Mm-hmm. And what were the early stages of those arts groups like in Waco?
I think they were very dynamic. It was fun times. The symphony, as it does now, had a strong support system with their additional symphony support. And so I was a member of that group, always working on fundraisers with the Historic Foundation. In the spring, they had the Brazos River Festival. So one of the first things I did, which Judy McCracken still remembers, is I created a room called Cinderella in Fort House. And, for the Art Center did... I think that was the first fundraiser we ever went to, and it was in the convention center downtown. And then eventually I did the fundraiser, which was the best little art center in Waco, which was downtown. It was based on, we built a house in the middle and we had chickens, and it was very, very funny.
It's so interesting to see how art sort of like a weed or a grass, it just spurts up through the cracks. Like, good art finds its way out to the public. I recently was in Albany, Texas, and I visited the old jailhouse art center there.
Yes.
It's this incredible old jail.
Yes.
That some mostly families from Fort Worth with a lot of money and arts interest had worked to put this together. But you had something that was literally a prison and now is bringing joy and life to so many people through the visual arts.
Yeah. I think the arts are so important. I'm going to give my age away, but still, who cares? I was born in 1943. So after World War II, in Liverpool and Chester, the first thing that really happened was the theatres saying, at the end of World War II in 45, we're going to have the theatres open for Christmas. Half of them were bombed. But somehow they got productions of pantomime going. And pantomime, of course, is Britain's favorite thing at Christmas time, the stories of Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Jack and the Beanstalk. And so, the little town where I live, they got a bus and they took... some of the members in our little housing estate to the theater. And I was five. And I could not believe when the curtain went up. It was so sparkly, so bright. Ah, it was just amazing. And it's been the image that's been with me all my life as to what the arts can do. Because in London, they kept the theatres open. And for one kind of small hour in your life, you were taken away from the scariness, from the bombing, to go and enjoy a concert, go and see a show. And so I think that's what the arts does. It takes you, hopefully, to a better place, to a place where you laugh and you're enjoying. And perhaps somebody who's sad, you can make them feel happy because they've seen a piece of artwork. So I think that's what the arts can do.
And such an opportunity to tell stories. You've been very involved with the Doris Miller Memorial and telling the terrific tale of this World War II hero, Doris Miller, and putting it there on the east side of the river.
Yes.
And making a point of pride for all of Waco and specifically East Wacoans. Talk a little bit about the process of getting that memorial up and where we are.
Well, you know, we started in 2009, and that's, you know, you feel is a long time ago. But, you know, we had to get some land, and we chose two or three sites, and then we went to the city because they all belong to the city. And the you know, thank you to Mayor Duncan at that time. The city dedicated 2.2 acres of land in the Bledsoe Miller Park, which was so appropriate. After that, we created an RFP. We used our the experience of our history professors in Waco at MCC and at Baylor to write the story of Doris Miller. Bill Falco wrote about the site so that he was the planning person, so that every little part of the RFP was created. And then we sent it out to the U.S., and we had 28 entries from all over the United States. We chose five finalists.
And these are architects wanting to design
the
memorial?
These are architects wanting to design the memorial. And they had to do it in partnership with a sculptor. And so five finalists came into Waco after a six-month rigorous review of all 28. We ended up choosing Stan Carroll from Oklahoma City, and his partner was Eddie Dixon from Lubbock. And Eddie Dixon is a self-taught sculptor, but his work is in the Smithsonian, and Colin Powell owns some of his work. He is a realistic sculptor, and he does the most amazing work.
What does the
he
memorial...
He was a biology professor first, so he studied paleontology. And so he kind of was in there, you know.
A great understanding of bone structure, I'm sure.
He did, yes.
What does the memorial mean for a young Wacoan, someone who didn't live in Waco with Doris Miller, or World War II seems like echoes of the past?
I think for a young Wacoan, I hope they look at him and see the 19-year-old, 20-year-old that he was in 1941. And they realize that, you know, you always don't do just what's expected of you. That you look at him and you realize that in his day, an African-American was not allowed to use a gun when hired in the Navy. The military, the Army, yes, but the military, the Navy, no. So what he became at that very early age, without even thinking, in that there was a need for someone to man a gun, he manned it. You know, he'd used a gun in Waco for shooting rabbits and stuff. He was not unfamiliar. But in the job that he had, he was required to do more than what was expected of him. And he just went along and did it. And I think that, as a young person, I think that's the power of this memorial. Always try to do a little bit more than what's expected of you. If you're volunteering, if it's your job, if it's just helping your mom and dad or your neighbor, you know, just do a little bit more. That's what he did. And he died in the Pacific when the Liscombe Bay was torpedoed with most of the crew. Very few of the crew of the Liscombe Bay survived. So he never knew what his actions actually brought forth within the military, within the Navy, that there was a change and equality became important.
I think it's so important.
And so he's a leader in that civil rights movement without knowing it.
Exactly. Well, and for people of my generation, it's so powerful to hear from someone like you who lived through segregation. And you hear stories, for instance, a couple weeks ago, I got to hear the recently passed Reverend Willie Stanley talk about living in Waco and being a World War II veteran and coming back. And he used to not be able to eat in this restaurant, but now that he was wearing his uniform, he got to eat in that restaurant.
Yes.
But his father, who had come down to see him downtown, had to stand outside and watch his son through the window eating. And you recognize that this separation, this segregation that we had was not that long ago.
No, it wasn't. And it's hard to understand that a group of our Americans could not go where they wanted to go. And that also included Cameron Park. I think this memorial is also giving Waco a huge leadership role in showing that we value everybody.
Amen to that. That is so powerful, and I'm grateful for you using your platform to push an initiative like the Doris Miller Memorial. You're hearing from Doreen Ravenscroft, who is the president of the Waco Cultural Arts Festival, which will be happening
this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
How did the Cultural Arts Fest get its legs, and how did you get involved?
It got its legs in 2004 when we realized there wasn't going to be a free arts festival. And so myself, Henry Wright, Sam Torres, we started Waco Cultural Arts Fest. We wanted it to be free. It was important because we wanted it to have an emphasis on education, specifically arts education. The schools were, cutting down, the arts get cut. And yet we have so many visual learners that get lost in those very early years. 5, 6, and 7. And when you've lost them in those ages, they're probably not really going to succeed nearly as well. So because the visual arts itself is a way of imprinting into your brain the choices. You're choosing when you're choosing colors. You're building decision making. They're just the visual arts is those small building blocks in the very early ages for all that decision making that you do later on in life. And if we don't imprint it early, it's not going to happen for some of our kids. And some of our kids, they need to be able to visual learn before they can move on a few steps, and they're probably much more settled when they get to 9, that they can go do much more just with books. And I think the computer has been the biggest thing for our visual learners, that they can see more about what they have to learn, rather than it just being on a page and in numbers and words, which they're not computing very well in their brain because they're more visual.
It's so important to reach young people with the arts. And like you mentioned, the Waco Cultural Arts Festival will be this weekend, but that comes and goes. You're actually working on a project on Elm Avenue next to Lula Jane's that will make a more permanent educational arena for arts and young people.
I am. How did you know? Yes, it's exciting. I bought the old, the Ravenscroft Foundation I founded to buy the old drugstore, because that building was initially the first Pipkin drugstore in Waco. And then in the early 50s, it was built upwards so that it could be changed into a cinema. The cinema was a segregated cinema. So the exciting part about all of this is that the second level is still there, that when we turn it into an arts hub for East Waco, it'll be for everybody.
East Waco has been in the news recently. Elm Avenue is starting to attract the eyes of investors, and we just heard that there were recently slated to be 3 4-story hotels that'll be coming up on MLK. You were a part of this Elm Avenue revitalization. How do you, as someone who's working to develop there, ensure that the development around you is inclusive and is helpful for all of Waco and specifically East Wacoans?
Well, I've worked in East Waco since the early 90s, doing arts camps and lots of other things. So I've actually imprinted Waco Cultural Arts Fest there for a long time. I have lots of friends over there. And I think what we have to really understand is that East Waco was really the industrial hub of Waco until it lost all those amazing brick buildings. You know, when I was doing my research, I looked at the Sanford maps, and you can see all the drawings of some of the buildings and how, you know, those elegant 1930s brick buildings and earlier were, with archways. We've got, you know, 2 or 3 examples still left in East Waco. And I'm hoping we don't lose some of that feeling that when folks come in. I mean, I've got a strange piece attached to my building, but it's more an architectural, sculptural piece. But I'm hoping that we'll see more maybe brownstone and red brick and more of that industrial rectangular feel that maybe we can bring back, because I think a lot of those folks in the community, they really, you know, they don't want to lose the village feel. You really feel a village feel when you go into East Waco and folks are saying hi. And, this morning there was somebody cooking barbecue. It smelled so good. And it wasn't DeMario's. It was someone else. And so, you know, you just, you know, you see the gardens that are growing there, and the vegetable gardens. You really realize that it's home too. And I think that's the one thing we've got to make sure that we keep the village.
When Andrea Bearfield was on Downtown Depot with me a few months ago, we were talking about Elm Avenue and future development, and she mentioned how important it is to recognize that the rise of Elm has to happen with East Waco and not simply to East Waco or in East Waco. And developers who are coming in with ideas like yours for interacting with the neighborhood, taking the young people in the neighborhood and educating them, those are the initiatives that East Wacoans are going to be excited about and that are going to benefit all of Waco.
Yes, I'm hoping that we'll be able to do some great after-school programs for the kids, and everybody feels it's a safe place to come.
Doreen Ravenscroft is the president of the Waco Cultural Arts Fest. Thank you so much, Doreen, for coming by the show and telling us a little bit about your story.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Thanks again to Doreen Ravenscroft, Jordy Dickey, American Bank, Andreas Alumis with Thirst Coffee, and you for tuning in. If you want to stay in touch in between episodes, find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Waco Business News. And this weekend, if you're looking for something fun, head down to Elm Avenue for the Waco Cultural Arts Fest. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.